Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and joined by Joe Pompo of Get Reps, one of the conversations that I have been most looking forward to as he and I have planned this in recent weeks and months. I remember covering Joe as a college lacrosse player, and we're going to get into that a little bit. But the reason I'm so excited for this conversation is because he and I speak so frequently. Typically, I'm walking around my neighborhood and all of a sudden it's like 10, 11, 12,000 steps because there's so much rich detail in terms of what's going on as far as the development of the product and the development of the business over there at Gut Reps. Joe, thanks so much for joining.
And thanks, Terry. I appreciate you having me.
So we're going to take it as fact that people listening to this know that Get Reps is a smart lacrosse ball. And among other features, it tracks your wall ball reps, it tracks your shot speed. It has a lost ball function, which is very important. But we've been going at this, pounding at the grindstone for several years now. And I think that message is really well out there. And so instead, you know, I think how to frame this conversation most interestingly is talking about the app, talking about the interactions that you've had with a lot of the users, and then, you know, maybe talking a little bit more about all the trials and tribulations that kind of brought you to this point. So let's just start, you know, the app. Like, what is it? Tell us a little bit about what happens in there.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the lead, and it's actually really a great point, because where we started, you know, going back all the way to when we first launched, it was really like a bare bones experience. It was, you know, almost like a, you know, walking tracker, you know, step tracker for, you know, wall ball and shooting. It was, you know, just, you know, open up the app, you know, start a session, and if you threw the ball against the wall 10 times, it would count 10 and you would go on your way, and you'd be able to check the tracker progress and see where you're at. But what's been really interesting from, you know, my point of view, and I think everyone else on our team's point of view, has been seeing from a customer experience, from the user experience, they've really driven the boat in terms of like telling us what they want to see, what they gravitate towards. And there's been some really like interesting points in time that have like really been like catalyzers for, you know, new features and really like taking the company in the direction that we're now headed. And the first one I can think of was just adding leaderboards. It was suggested to us by, I believe, a coach, and we thought, hey, why not try it? And we put it out there, and almost overnight we saw, you know, the usage spike. You know, everybody who already had a ball, they suddenly were playing a lot more, and we were like, oh, that's definitely interesting. Like, let's see what we can explore there. And ultimately that led to us creating a essentially a team portal. It's a team dashboard that now is the probably the driving factor for what is really like driving the growth with us. So we've got all the things we can do on the individual level, but the teams are really getting excited about the idea of having accountable, verified, reliable, and competitive, you know, wall ball training outside of practice, right? I think most coaches, you know, they'll, whether you're coaching, you know, 8 year olds or college kids, they'll, you know, at the end of practice or maybe multiple times throughout practice, be like, make sure you're hitting the wall, you know, hit the ball, you know, tonight, tomorrow, hit it every day. And, you know, what really like stands out to me is I remember hearing from many coaches that, you know, if you want to be great, you got to, you know, hit the wall and, you know, play 100, you know, do 100 reps left-handed, then 100 reps right-handed. And that was like what would be setting you on your path to greatness. And now we're at the point where, you know, that's good for maybe 300th place on our weekly wall ball leaderboard. Kids just really, really gravitate towards the idea of being able to, you know, check their standing against everyone else, and then go put in the work to be where they want to be. Because I really think kids have a pretty innate and powerful sense of like what they want to develop as a player, but without the ability to compare themselves to others and have a benchmark, it's tough to understand like what's it take, and that leaderboard. And even generally just like the team module where you can see like everybody on your team and see their leaderboard and see where they're, you know, putting in the work has really led to like a really defining moment with our company, and just kind of seeing the, you know, it's more than just like counting the reps. It's more than, you know, shot speed. Now we're at the point where we've got a whole training library where you can, you know, open up your app and maybe you don't know what you want to do this day or what kind of, you know, session you want to have. And you can just choose from, you know, depending on your mood, what kind of wall ball session you want to have. There's, you know, different lengths of time. The playlists in the background are different. You know, sometimes they're like, you know, country music or hip hop music. Sometimes the coaches are telling you it's focused on, you know, your weak hand. It's really taken an interesting step, at least in my opinion, of where we're going to go and what's possible with our app for sure.
So I think the way I interpret that is you kind of have two different approaches relative to comps to what the app is supposed to do. On the one hand, you have Strava, which is, you know, the kind of, as I understand it, the, you know, preeminent app for tracking, you know, your workouts, right? And it creates community within, you know, people who you know, become friends and you know, compare their workouts to each other and everything that goes along with that. And then on the other hand, you've got Peloton, where you have instructors that are, you know, providing guidance on how to structure their workout. And, you know, those things happen or develop in parallel to each other. One of the things that you told me more than a year ago that continues to resonate is the social element of what having a team-based leaderboard can do to a team. And the example that you used was, you know, a club team with kids from a bunch of different schools who were pretty newly put together. And so as a result, they, you know, weren't that close of friends. And prior to utilizing the app and its leaderboard, the, you know, moments pre-practice when, you know, kids would be sitting around waiting for the whistle to blow and to get into their, you know, warm-up or stretching lines, whatever, line drills, whatever it might be, you know, those kids were, that time was spent with kids looking at their phones. But after they started using the leaderboard, that time was filled with the players on the team talking about the leaderboard and their own rep performance. What has that been like in terms of the continued feedback about the way in which the app has actually created a social dynamic for individual teams that they use it?
Yeah, that's a great point. And honestly, it's probably one of the most surprising things that have, you know, developed over the years with Get Reps and Smart Lacrosse Ball. Just seeing the amount of feedback where coaches are saying like, this is actually a culture improvement for our program and our team, which I mean, Luke and I have both had lofty goals for the company, but I don't think that culture improvement was something that we really targeted as something that like we expected to happen. But after hearing explanations, it completely makes sense, right? I mean, I think most people at this point know that, you know, social media has, you know, definitely benefits and, you know, detriment things to it. And it does, there's things that can really, you know, have an effect on a child's development. And I'm really proud to say that our app has really been a, you know, a positive for kids, where I can't tell you how many times we get emails saying, hey, like my son or daughter, they come home from school and the first thing they do is check their team's leaderboard. And if they're not where they want to be, that's the first thing they do is they go and hunt the wall after school, like before they have a snack, before they do anything else. And that's been a positive change in my daughter's life. That's been a positive change in my son's life. And coaches say the same thing, where it's, you know, it used to be, hey, get your, you know, get reps in between this practice and next practice. You know, and a lot of programs now have, you know, parental sign off and things like that, because they're trying to make it competitive. But where it falls short is there's no actual validation, right? You know, Johnny or, you know, Sarah goes outside and does their ball. They come back in, tell their parents they did 1,000 reps each hand or whatever they say. The parents can say, hey, like they went outside, they looked like they were near the lacrosse, you know, rebounder or the wall. Like, okay, I'm going to sign off on that. But that undermines like all of the trust and all of the possibilities for competition, because at the end of the day, people are not dumb. Kids are not dumb. They know that people are just making up, you know, or exaggerating, to be kind, what kind of effort they're putting in. And at the end of the day, wall ball is very unique, and it's very unique in the sport of lacrosse in the sense that it's purely an effort like exercise and effort, right? If you either put in the effort or you don't, right? No one's asking how many you caught. They're asking how many you did, how many you tried to do. And I think that's like a very distinct difference that the sport of lacrosse has from other sports in terms of, you know, we can measure how much effort you're putting in. And that translates all the way down the board to, I hear from coaches talking about, hey, like, you know, it's been a godsend because, you know, the worst thing and the most uncomfortable thing for them to do as a coach is have to have that conversation with parents where there's a, you know, a misunderstanding about the amount of playing time a certain child should get. And, you know, before our product was instituted, it was, well, I don't think they're putting in the work at home, or they're not putting in the effort at home, or not putting up, you know, that kind of thing. And the parents would say, like, no, I see them. I know they're doing it. I see them putting in the workout back, like, you know, that kind of thing. And there's nothing, the coach can't go anywhere from that. It's like, okay, well, you said you saw them. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I can't say, no, there's no way they did the work. But coaches know. They know who's putting in the work outside of practice, you know, generally. And now that there's like a simple verified system for wall ball, everybody on the team, parents, children, coaches, they all understand that there's no, you know, fitting the numbers. There's no getting around it. And nobody wants to see a, you know, a goose egg next to their name. They, so, you know, there's probably not a system in the world that exists where you can get every player to actually put in the work behind, you know, behind closed doors when no one's watching, besides get reps. And it's just been very interesting to see how big of a driver that's been in terms of just hearing from coaches, hearing from parents about, hey, this is a culture improvement for us because the kids are learning accountability. They're learning, you know, how to be competitive in a, you know, call it like a safe area where they're not, it's not, you know, the end of the world, but everybody wants to see you at least try, right? And that's really, I think, the kind of message that gets lost on kids sometimes, that it's not all about winning and losing. It's sometimes about just doing your best and putting in the effort.
So let's take a step back and learn a little bit more about your lacrosse journey. Based on the fact that you've built a business and dedicated your career to what is arguably the most fundamental element of getting better at lacrosse, it probably comes as no surprise that you did go to West Genesee High School, and the home and bastion of fundamental lacrosse, and wore those high socks. Started your college career at Albany, finished at St. Rose, and you referenced Luke earlier. That's your co-founder, Luke Cometti, who was a high school teammate, also started his career at Albany before finishing up at Syracuse. How do you think that lacrosse background informed yours and Luke's decision to strike out in this entrepreneurial endeavor?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I find myself thinking about it a lot personally. I know Luke does too. Really, like for me, what it comes down to is there was a distinct point in time in my athletic career where I more or less was like blindsided by the development of the players around me, where, you know, it's like one year you're starting and the next year you find yourself so far down the bench, you don't know what happened. And in looking, reflecting on it and looking back in retrospect, the thing that changed for me and allowed me to move up the depth chart was specifically wall ball. It was setting up I remember like it was yesterday, I set up a rebounder in my parents' basement, and that whole winter, right, upstate New York, you can't really get outside and hit the wall, but I moved the rebounder in the basement, and that whole winter I was completely motivated to just play as much wall ball as I could. Every day, just a complete dedication to that. And it's one of those unique things that sticks with you because I saw the results, right? So like, I think early on in tryouts, I got, you know, as you know, the compliments at West Genesee are few and far between, right? It's more about expectations and living up to the standard. But in this instance, it was, you know, a coach pulled me aside and was like, hey, your stick skills have gotten, you know, tremendously better. Like, what have you done? And really it came down to just playing wall ball. And I think West Genesee, you know, I think if there's one thing that it's known for, it's discipline and their stick skills. And I really think like as this game grows and develops, one of the biggest things is making the sport, you know, coming up with ways to make their earlier successes, like an earlier chance for a kid to succeed, right? There's only one way for kids into the sport. And it's the guys to try it themselves. And unlike basketball, unlike football, it's a little more difficult or sometimes a lot more difficult to have that early success where it's, you know, you can catch a football, you can throw a football the first time you pick it up as a 5, 6, 7 year old. It's very difficult to throw the ball and catch the ball as a 5, 6, or 7 year old. And to overcome that, we have to come up with ways to get them to stick with it longer, right? Because that delayed gratification is sometimes lost on kids. And if we can get them to stick with it a little bit longer, have a little bit more fun with it, then instead of just showing up for that, you know, that one demo day or the one, you know, introductory class they get at gym or wherever, they'll really put in, you know, a few more times. And then they see that, okay, now I can see, okay, I threw the ball once, I caught the ball once. And that's where our product comes in, because it really provides them, especially in emerging areas where there's not, you know, amazing coaches on every corner like there are in some parts of the country. You know, our app gives them the opportunity where they can just buy the ball. You know, they can live, you know, in a secluded rural area. They don't need to have a coach anywhere nearby. They can just buy our ball, buy the app, which is, you know, one unit together, but they go in our app and they can see the training library. Hey, 5-minute beginner wall ball. Okay, let's listen to this. Let's do what they're saying. And then I can actually see what I'm done. All right, I caught the ball 7 times, which it might be a little bit different than if there's no one counting and there's no verified, you know, training data. They might say, hey, I was out there for 10 minutes. I only caught a few balls. And that's looked as more of a negative as opposed to a positive of, hey, I actually caught 7 of those. And so, I mean, I just feel very strongly about just the development of the sport has grown in great leaps, over the last 20 years, but it could get so much bigger, especially with the Olympics. Everyone talks about the Olympics, but there's going to be such a push behind that, that this sport could really, really take off if we get kids to stick with it just a little bit longer, because we have to acknowledge that it is a little bit more difficult to catch a ball and throw a ball as it coming out of a stick than it is catching a, you know, a basketball or a football.
Let's nerd out a little bit by talking about the exercise of playing wall ball. And I'll just share a little bit of an anecdote that kind of changed my perspective on it completely. So during the earlier days of my inside lacrosse tenure, the Stanwyck family wall ball situation was a thing of legend, but there was no visual evidence of what it was. And then when Steele signed with Under Armour, one of the commercials that they filmed was actually at his home of him playing wall ball. And I went, and it was so eye-opening for two reasons. So the first is that, like your comment about having a rebounder in your basement, their wall ball situation was in the garage, right? So the thing that immediately stood out was the constraint of a ceiling. Because I played wall ball against my garage door outside. And I think, you know, there was a Maverick commercial kind of play anywhere, I think was kind of the theme. And there was one shot of a kid playing wall ball against a barn. And he was basically throwing the ball kind of 20, 25 feet in the air and then catching it as it came back down. And I remember one of the reactions that we talked about was just how uncommon that type of throw and catch is in an actual game of lacrosse. So then back to Steele, like one of the things that was so interesting about it was, you know, basically he would kind of do one of two primary things, which was, you know, throw, he was probably 8-10 feet away from the wall and would throw it eye length, usually with like a downward trajectory. So it would bounce and then he would catch it off the bounce on the way back. Or he would throw it basically underhand and bounce the throw. It would then hit the wall and then bounce back and he would catch it more or less at eye level. And the reason that unlocked so much for me was because it helped me realize that the value of wall ball is way more about developing feel and way less about developing the mechanics of how to throw and catch. Because regardless of what your wall ball situation is, you're almost never going to replicate what it is like to catch a pass in a lacrosse game for a variety of reasons. So I don't have a question so much as I just want you to expound on that idea, specifically in the context of like how you designed these routines, these practices, and what you've learned, what you've gleaned both by evaluating the data and evaluating the user feedback.
Yeah, no, it is a very interesting point. And what I hear from that is, you know, regardless of whether you're throwing it, you know, downwards at the wall or you're throwing it underhand and up at the wall, that's going to put a tremendous amount of spin on the ball. And it really makes you break out of that, like, second, almost like it's actually a difficult pass to catch. So you can't just expect, you can't just, like, you know, secondarily expect it to go into your stick. You've got to actually think about the way the ball is spinning and put your stick at an angle that allows you to absorb that spin and then cradle it. It really is like a complete exercise in feel, which is drastically different than, call it, like, the traditional way you see kids play wall ball, where they're throwing the ball straight at the rebounder or at the wall and it's coming straight back at them. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's very rare for a player to be able to hold their stick, you know, right at their ear, and the ball comes zipping right into their pocket, which is basically, you know, a lot of ways that wall ball is played. And the other thing that is really led to the way that we've designed our trainings is, I've had this conversation with Luke a number of times, and it was really a formative thing of, like, what we wanted to put out there, which is, we both remembered as kids, like, wanting to go out and practice. Like, we had an idea of, like, you know, an underlying idea of, like, what kind of player we wanted to be at the end of the day. Like, we wanted to put in the work, but so often we'd go out to the backyard or to the field, and we had, you know, what do we want to practice? Like, what do you, like, I think that's something that kids commonly find themselves thinking of. What do I want to practice today? And there are definitely apps out there where you can, you know, go through a bunch of training routines, and some of them do great jobs. Sometimes they don't do such a great job. But at the end of the day, like, it's almost, it should be more intuitive than that. Like, hey, I want to work on my stick skills. All right, what can you give me that's going to work on my stick skills? And that's where our training library comes in, where it's not just, hey, do 25 reps of, you know, overhand right hand, then do 25 reps of overhand left handed. It's an integrated, actually sounds like a podcast where the coach is actually talking through the training. You know, hey, like, we're going to get started with righty overhand. The reason why we're going to get started with righty overhand is because we're interested in, you know, we just want to get a flow. We want to get our muscles warmed up. You know, keep your feet moving. You know, keep your eye on a specific brick. If you're using a rebounder, find it, you know, find as small of an area as you can to drill into and really focus on that. And that way, you know, it's, whether you're a beginner, you're an expert, somewhere in between, you can just go into our app library, pick an app, pick one of the trainings that they, you know, looks interesting, whether it's because the music you like in the background, or it's one of the coaches that you like, or you were focused on, you know, improving your weak hand. There's any number of trainings to pick, and you can just pick one, and they're so engaging. They're so varied. They've got enough fundamental reminders that, you know, you're not going to pick up bad habits, and just simply saying, like, hey, keep your feet moving is enough to keep kids' feet moving. And the response from that has been absolutely amazing. Honestly, we thought that we'd make like 10 or 15 trainings, and that would be, like, you know, kids would rotate through them and that'd be it. We have since revised that plan, and now we're coming out with new ones at least once a week, if not twice a week. We've got three different coaches on there going through the training, just because kids have taken such a liking to it. And each of those trainings have their own leaderboards too. So a coach can go say, hey guys, I want you guys to do the 15-minute weak hand, you know, improvement cycle. They go do that training, and then coach can see, not only do they do that training, what, how many reps they got, how long did it take them to do it, but then it feeds into the greater system of how much they do this week, right? And so now there's competitions going on multiple levels, and, you know, that's perfect for the kid who maybe isn't top of the leaderboard every week, right? There's some kids who are just, you know, at that point in their you know, development are further ahead, but that gives them something that they can shine at too, where they can, you know, instead of looking at themselves as 13th on the team out of 14 in overall reps for this particular training, they did pretty good. They were sixth, and it just keeps kids from, you know, falling into a cycle of maybe thinking, you know, that they're not good enough or just getting down on themselves, and really works the social media angle of the positivity, where it's, hey, like, there's a reinforcement that they're actually doing something, right? Which is better than not having any clue. And that's really, before we came along, that's really what kids had to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. It creates a really interesting, you know, kind of duality that, you know, I think as this continues to proliferate will be interesting to follow. But in the theme of continuing to nerd out, you're effectively an inventor, engineer, scientist, and have handled a good portion of the technological and technical side of this product development cycle. Can you just briefly summarize some of the challenges that you've had to come that you did not anticipate when you set out on this journey?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, they're numerous, but right off the bat, we really were inspired to start this business because there were already smart baseballs in the market, and we were well into the project by the time we realized that the technology that they were using wouldn't work whatsoever in lacrosse. Just, you know, if you threw the smart baseballs down on the ground, you know, and they hit concrete or something else that was, you know, similarly hard, they would break on the spot, even if they were only going 15, 20 miles an hour. And we knew that would never work because, you know, if you're playing volleyball against a brick wall or concrete wall, not only has to survive that, but it has to, you know, survive that thousands and thousands and thousands of times. And that was something that we definitely did not foresee coming about, but we spent, and it was, sorry.
And that's super interesting because one of the core things that says is that you can't hit a smart baseball. So it really is only for, you know, pitching track analysis.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very interesting, but it's really set us up to have a very exciting possibility for the future because we're completely focused on lacrosse right now, but, our technology transfers over into other sports like completely. But that was a huge hurdle to overcome. It took us close to a year. And we're still the only smart ball company that has that kind of durability. So much so that we actually have projects with companies outside of sports that are looking for that kind of, you know, durability, like very high strength electronics. Because if you think about it, there's not very many electronics, if any, that are out there that can be smashed on the ground and don't break. And we're very proud of the fact that we can definitely say that ours do not break. But then beyond that, simply just, okay, how do you take that technology and then make this feel like a lacrosse ball, right? And our first generation ball, I thought that was, you know, we did a good job of it, but it wasn't all the way there in terms of the, you know, it bounced a little bit less high. You know, if you dropped it on the ground, it weighed a little bit more than a regulation lacrosse ball. But, you know, thanks to a lot of hard work and honestly, our customers being really, really, really strongly behind us and being willing to, you know, if we send out a survey or we send out any sort of communication, we get a very large amount of replies. And people are really willing to help us out, whether it be providing, you know, video data to troubleshoot, you know, something going wrong. But really what ended up happening was our first generation ball allowed us to get, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of data points from each customer who purchased that. And we could see, you know, what were we doing well? What were we, you know, maybe lacking a little bit? What needed to be improved? And we spent, you know, close to 6 months developing the successor version, the R1 Pro, which has been out now. And I'm so glad that Luke and I decided to make that decision to like really like hunker down and figure out, you know, how could this be improved? Because the result with this R1 Pro is a lacrosse ball that looks, feels, bounces just like a regular lacrosse ball, but it's got all this important technology in it that's really driving a lot of positive things in the sport of lacrosse. And obviously we're just getting started with that. We've got a lot of big plans, both with the smart ball and with other additional technology. But it's been a very exciting journey to go from, hey, I think this can work, to, yeah, this definitely works. And seeing that the lacrosse world is definitely behind it and, you know, willing to try it out. And now that we're on, you know, the second generation that just performs so much better and really very, very few, if any, like issues have arisen, it's just given, you know, lacrosse world and teams and programs and honestly just mom and pop just that much more confidence to go out and invest in this kind of product, because, you know, there's some natural barriers that they, you kind of have to get behind, which is, you know, they're worried about losing it, right? Hey, it's another lacrosse ball. Like, hey, like, it's just going to get lost, which I completely understand. And one of the very interesting things that have developed through the launch and now the second generation launch is through over 20,000 balls that have made their way out into, you know, the wild, we have had less than 30 lost ball claims filed. And yes, we have a tracker. We have like it's basically air tags inside our ball. And that is partly responsible for it. But honestly, the biggest thing has been just realizing that kids are smart. They understand, like, this is not just a regular lacrosse ball. It's a, you know, expensive, certainly more expensive than a regular lacrosse ball, piece of equipment, piece of technology that I'm relying on to get better. And so they're not putting it in harm's way the way they would with a normal lacrosse ball or a regular lacrosse ball. They're taking care of it as if they got an iPod or an iPad or an iPhone, which has been really interesting to see. And I'm glad that we have the tracking technology, but really, like, it's just a different ballgame because kids just want to take care of it because they see the benefit.
There are two additional development hurdles that I want to address. But before moving off of the point that you just made, one other common consideration is that lacrosse balls get greasy, but you guys have a built-in solution for that. So can you just explain how or why lacrosse balls get greasy and why yours don't?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the bulk of lacrosse balls that are, you know, that are out and about are made from vulcanized rubber, and vulcanized rubber has essentially oils. It's essentially an organic compound, and when it's exposed to sun and heat, but sun is really the main culprit. It essentially pushes material out from the center of the ball to the outside. So if you think of it as, you know, there's little microscopic dimples on the surface of the lacrosse ball. You know, it feels smooth, but really what gives it that grip is that if you looked in our microscope, there would be little, you know, peaks and valleys throughout that ball. Little
and those dimples. Are pores, essentially.
Yeah, exactly, right? Exactly. And once exposed to the UV from the sun, those pores essentially are filled and expand, so you now are left with more of a homogeneous, you know, it's essentially the same on the surface throughout. So you don't have those, you know, peaks and valleys anymore. You just have one smooth surface, compounded with the idea that whether you're playing on turf or grass, there is, you know, everyone's seen, you know, you leave your car outside for a day or two, you know, in the summer, it's coated with material. That same, you know, debris and microscopic, you know, dirt particles, that gets all over the lacrosse ball too. Guardian really changed the game for lacrosse balls a few years ago by introducing the pearl ball, which, rather than using vulcanized rubber as its material, uses polyurethane, which is not an organic substance and doesn't have the same, you know, response to UV and sunlight that vulcanized rubber balls do. And that was, I mean, really, it's a godsend for us because it opened up the potential for our ball, because if it only lasted a few weeks, like traditional rubber balls do, we wouldn't have a viable business. But because the polyurethane balls really, truly don't grease, it allows us to have the ball, you know, for, you know, a year, year and a half. Really, it's not really, the only limit is basically your own tolerance for, you know, over time, the ball will get a little dirty. But if you're okay with it not, you know, not being exactly white and neon green, as if it's fresh out of the carton, then you can use this ball for 5 years and it will still perform.
So to the two points I wanted to bring up, the first is, I don't know how people think lacrosse balls are manufactured, but regardless of whether they're rubber or polyurethane, they are effectively two half spheres jammed together and then fused. And that's why lacrosse balls have a seam on them. Mm-hmm. So, of course, in developing a smart lacrosse ball that has an electronic core inside of it, the process would be similar. One of the things that I found very interesting when you explain the challenges and eventual solutions, and I don't want you to disclose anything that's proprietary, but to the extent that you can talk about it, was basically not just how you put a core in between two effectively injected, molded polyurethane pieces of really hot equipment, but also how you make sure it's as close to the center and stays there when the two sides are smashed together as possible to make sure that it doesn't have a center of gravity that is off center and then makes the ball behave in an unnatural way. Although it would probably be cool to play with some of the defects, just because you could probably spin curve your lacrosse shots in ways that you'd only be able to do with a baseball. Just describe that problem and that solution.
Yeah, no, that does sound pretty fun. You have some corkscrew balls going out there. Honestly, it's been part of the great partnership that we've had with Guardian, with their Pearl Ball. They manufacture the Pearl Ball right in Atlanta, Georgia, in Peachtree Corners. And they've been great to work with. And we really got to see, because, a lot of lacrosse companies, I don't think this is a secret, a lot of companies do their manufacturing overseas with contract manufacturers. So you can't, go and visit their manufacturing plant and see exactly how it's done and really drill into the process and how to improve it and how to make it work for what you're trying to do. But thankfully, Pearl being made in the USA, we went down to Atlanta and we saw the process and how they make it. And really it was a pretty honestly difficult solution to come up with. But ultimately what we landed on was, to your point, there's two halves of a lacrosse ball that they're empty molds. They get poured with the polyurethane, and then a few minutes after they're poured, they close on themselves, and that forms a full sphere, right? So it's two half spheres, and then combined into one. And we have essentially, to use more lay terms, essentially a jig that fits on over one of the half spheres and uses an electromagnet to hold our electronics, our technology, our smart core, as we call it, in place. And it holds it in place for about 2 minutes. And that 2 minutes gives that half of the sphere enough time to solidify and strengthen so that now nothing is going to move. And then that second sphere is closed on top of it. And that guarantees us the placement that we're looking for, which is dead center. And I'll also mention the other thing that really helps our ball maintain its durability, and I find it personally really interesting, is our wireless charging is unlike pretty much every other wireless charging product that's in existence at the consumer level right now, whereas those all use what's called a Qi wireless standard, which is very great and efficient at charging electronics, but you only have about 2 to 4 millimeters of distance that you can have between the charging coil and the receiving coil that allows the electricity to pass back and forth between the two. We have a proprietary charging technology that allows us to have those coils more like 3 inches apart, and it allows us to put that coil, the charging coil that receives the power, which eventually feeds in the battery, we can put that right up in the center of the ball along with the rest of our technology. Whereas, the smart baseballs in the world and, there's smart hockey puck, smart football, any of those products that recharge, they have to have that coil right up on the surface of the ball, which, thin copper coils do not mix well with impacts, which really limits their ability to withstand any sort of impact and continue to operate effectively. Oh, shoot. Hey, Terry, I lost you. Can you hear me? Shoot. I can't hear you at all. I have no idea what happened.
I muted myself.
Oh, that's why. Okay. Yeah. I got you now.
I don't know. I don't know how much of this bumps up against the issue of durability or having the ball or the core directly in the center of the ball. But one of the other really interesting developments has been, you know, the early models worked very well with bounce backs, but struggled a little bit with solid walls, brick or cement otherwise. And you developed your way through that. How do you describe that problem and that solution?
Yeah, that's a great point. It was kind of a 2-point problem and 2-point solution. Part of it, to your earlier point, was a basically an engineering and construction problem. Our core was essentially too big relative to the lacrosse ball, so there wasn't enough lacrosse ball material to have the ball be reflective of like the typical bounce you'd expect from a lacrosse ball. And on our second generation ball, we shrunk our core by over 50%. So now it's barely the size of like a gumball. And that allows the true, you know, bounce for a lacrosse ball, right? So it's so small relative to the, you know, roughly 2.5-inch diameter lacrosse ball that it bounces exactly the same. And we also added some engineering that allows it to compensate for the fact that that's, you know, basically a solid piece of material. So we actually give it a little extra bounce. So now it bounces just like a lacrosse ball. But the other thing was, honestly, just the way that we went about our algorithm to count what a rep is. Inside our ball, there's an accelerometer, which, you know, measures acceleration, and a gyroscope, which measures spin. And we, without getting into like the details, but we were measuring, you know, what was a valid wall ball rep, one way, and we were able, through collecting all the data from, you know, the initial launch, we were able to collect a lot of data and see that there was actually some very unique characteristics that a ball has when it's just thrown. It doesn't actually have to hit anything first. Just leaving your stick, there's enough unique characteristics, whether you're a 7-year-old just learning to play or a, you know, professional player and 2-time MVP, there's still enough with that throw that allows you to basically create a signature or a profile to look for. And the easiest example I can give is the spin of the ball. You know, you would think that you'd be able to throw a ball and have it spin somewhat similar to the way a lacrosse ball is spins once it's thrown off a lacrosse stick, but that's actually not true at all, because the, you know, shooting strings are essentially what gives it the spin. So you're well on your, if you're throwing a lacrosse ball, you're well on your way to having enough power to, you know, have the ball at least leave your stick before the ball even begins spinning. And then once it hits those shooting strings, that's when it, you know, the spin really picks up, and it picks up in a big way. And that's like one of the key ingredients. There's like 30, but it's one of the key ingredients that goes into our algorithm determining what a valid wall ball rep is. And what's nice about that is that what we've come up with, it works perfectly regardless of if you're a beginner or you're an advanced player, and that way there's no missed reps, everything counts correctly. But it's unique enough that we also don't get false positive reps, where if you're playing on a blacktop and you throw the ball against you know, the wall, and then you miss it and now it goes bouncing away from you, you're not getting, you know, secondary, you know, rep counts, because it's now bouncing away and it kind of looks like it's bouncing, or it looks like it's being thrown. So that's been a huge advancement, because now that everybody has like 100% confidence that you can't sit down in your bedroom and bounce the ball on the ground and get wall ball reps, you actually have to have a ball on your stick and throw it. There's complete confidence that, you know, the numbers that are put up are the actual numbers, and so now the competition is just that much more verified, and people gravitate towards it, you know, exponentially more.
So to wind this conversation down, you've hinted at some future plans. And, you know, I know that there's a lot, both from the standpoint of app development, product development, computer vision, everything that goes along with that. I don't want you to get out over your skis, so I'm not going to ask you what those future plans are. But I am interested in just kind of a summary statement for how what you've learned over the last, what are we calling it, 3 years, 4 years?
Yes. Yeah, almost 4 years.
Yeah. How would you characterize what that has done for your point of view going forward in terms of how is this, really what I'm asking is like you're an entrepreneur, you know, have the experience of being a lacrosse entrepreneur. How does what you've learned over the last 4 years influence what you're going, what you see yourself doing, what you see GetReps doing over the course of call it the next 18 to 30 months?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Yeah, I think what might be different from maybe the way that we're, you know, perceived right now and where we're going is that we've got a very clear roadmap to becoming, you know, the lacrosse technology company. And what I mean by that is there are definitely ways that lacrosse can be taught, training can be developed, competition can be had, skill can be improved using technology beyond just a smart lacrosse ball. And we are going to deliver those type of solutions to individual and teams. And I'm personally extremely excited about it because there's other technologies outside of just what's inside the ball that are coming, you know, very soon that have the opportunity to really bring lacrosse to more people, bring better training to more people, and also bring, you know, add training to like add more to what people are doing now in the sense that we're partnering with all sorts of training academies, training platforms, individual lesson providers. And we feel we have got a pretty good understanding of what they would like to see in order to really take their, you know, what they're doing to the next level. And really it all boils down to, you know, getting the right information into players' hands, showing them, you know, the proper way of doing things, and then being able to measure that and then reliably quantify it. And yeah, I think I'll leave it at that. I'll leave out one other aspect, but that's there. Those alone are where we're headed, and I see a pretty bright future because yeah, there's one thing that's definitely true in my mind is that the skill development of lacrosse players has drastically increased over the last 20 years, and I think that's just going to continue to be true. Where, you know, I graduated high school in 2007, and I routinely, when I watch players play now, I think, you know, there's not a chance in heck that I'd, you know, be able to get a, you know, Division I scholarship at this point. If you took my skill level at the time I graduated and move it up to the class of 2026, the kids are just so much better. There's just so much quality learning. And, you know, our hope is to provide the technology that augments that and pushes that even further. And hopefully, you know, we start seeing kids who are going D1 out of, you know, Idaho and some of these other countries here, or country states, excuse me.
Well, that's a great note to end on. Joe Pompo, really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Can't wait to see where GetReps goes next.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.